This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Pakatani by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We are on to the last of this series of Coming Up for Air.
That is so exciting, and getting ready for the new cohort of students, and we'll have in between time some other interesting folks from that, because we've kind of been so busy doing our Coming Up for Air series that we have neglected the rest of our sustainability community.
So the rest of the world.
The whole world, eh?
So who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce the very wonderful Debbie Lawrence. Welcome, Demi. Thank you for joining us today.
Kia ora and welcome. Thank you both.
Kia ora, Demi. Where did you grow up, Demi?
I grew up in a very small town called Browns, which is in Southland, on a deer farm. It was a beautiful upbringing where I was surrounded by nature and animals constantly. Was building huts most of my time, my spare time, and just helping out on the farm where I could. It was mostly opening gates, but yeah, a real connection with nature right from my upbringing.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
It's a funny one. I guess I was so connected with my farm life that I had the strong urge that I wanted to be a chicken farmer when I grew up. And I remember when I said that at school, my teacher during teacher and parent interviews said to my parents, look, I think Demi has a lot more potential than just being a chicken farmer. And it was quite hard to hear this is all she wants to be with her life. but yeah, I think they're my favorite animal. And that was just a really humble way of living my life at that age.
I found it. I've been looking on a map while you were talking. So what happens in Browns?
Not much. There used to be a pub and now there's not even that. There is a small school, which I didn't go to because my parents wanted me to be with more children than just a handful to grow up with. So I went to a small school, still a small school, but bigger than the Brown School, called Lime Hills. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but they're a very environmentally minded school.
And so you didn't get to be a chicken farmer. What career path have you followed instead?
So it's still, I think you could tailor chicken farming to the line of sustainability, but now I'm along the lines of wanting to help businesses because I feel there's a lot of levers you can pull in business and organisations to help them be on a more sustainable path to help the wider world, ultimately.
You said, you know, you've described the beautiful place that you grew up in and the impact of your school. Can you narrow that down? Can you identify a moment in which you thought about, yep, sustainability is the way I'm going?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess there's been a lot of little moments throughout my life. I helped with the likes of Kakapo release in Te Anau, and then there was like the garden group during my primary school days. But I kind of lost that throughout high school. I guess it was those pressures that you feel of fitting in and doing what everybody else is doing. And it wasn't until my gap year before I started uni, I went to Ghana to volunteer, and that rekindled my love for the environment and my passion for sustainability, where I would see the rubbish and the emissions so clearly in that environment that it really spurred my passion again.
We're not going to skip over Ghana. How did you end up in Ghana?
I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. I was loosely passionate about sustainability, but I didn't know where that would lead. And so I decided to go on a gap year to kind of find myself, I suppose. And I wanted to be somewhere that I would actually be helpful and useful. And I saw that being Africa, and Ghana was the only African country that they were offering. But a lot of lessons were learnt there where I wasn't actually helping them. They had everything they need, and they have a beautiful society and way of living, and they don't need the white saviour necessarily to come in and tell them how to do it. I think it was a big growth learning experience for me being there. Yeah.
Let's take your music choice, and one that I definitely have, Florence and the Machine, Dog Days Are Over. Why this one?
So I feel I can connect both on a metaphorical and emotional level to the song. It's all about like release, renewal, and moving beyond hardship, which connects with sustainability and resonates with the journey towards sustainable change. It's a song full of hope and energy, and it makes me feel resilient. But it's also one of the first songs I ever had on my iPod growing up.
And wash mythical sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou ko tāhua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are. A triumph of nature's art. Perfect. Unique. And here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough. And we've had to draw upon the absolute depths of our inner reserves in order to survive and in order to navigate in quite a new reality that we find ourselves in now. So it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the opportunity to rest, to recover, to recalibrate, and we treat one another with care, compassion, and kindness at all times. Particularly with ourselves, you know, we've all had to adapt, we've all had to change. And some of the things that we were able to do before, or some of the ways that we went about doing things before, have had to shift and change also. In my own personal recovery journey, I have the long COVID, the post-viral fatigue. So in learning to navigate this and rest a lot more and enjoy resting a lot more and balancing my energy, tempering my desire to do everything and experience everything with the understanding that this has to be a more gradual process is a great skill to learn. And here I am, 38 years old, just really starting to enjoy establishing and maintaining a routine. This is the first time in my life I have moved through the world in this way, with a structure, with a routine, and it has helped me immensely. So I really hope for you, in this new way that we are all sharing this path, you're finding ways to care for yourself and sustain, maintain, perhaps even grow your energy reserves. And you are enjoying this process of new means of self-care. I know for myself, making sure that I put my feet in the sea every day is immensely helpful. Making sure I drink lots of water throughout the day. Making sure I get as much rest and good food, all that sort of thing, is immensely helpful. And making sure I have time with people who I really love spending time with is very important also. Beautiful music, the beauty of the living world, the beauty of the written word, the beauty of the spoken word. All these things really, really help me to survive the daily world. And of course, as I speak to you now, I am driving out on probably my favourite road, which is the Otago Peninsula Road. Takes us past these stunning volcanic cliffs alongside the volcanic crater that is the harbour, and such texture, such vivacity, all the colours, and beautiful boat sheds, beautiful boats, beautiful sea creatures, beautiful marine mammals, all of these beautiful seabirds. All of these life forms greeting us at this point where the sea meets the land. And of course, as a species, we are drawn to these spaces of change and transition. And as a species, we would not have survived if we were not capable of making a home, making a successful home in these places of change and transition. And so part of our journey now, as we move beyond this global pandemic into recovery mode, of course, is to draw upon those great stores of ancestral knowledge and expertise. So I really hope for you, wherever you're up to in your recovery journey, you are enjoying time and space for yourself and the capacity to draw strength and inspiration from the world around you. And of course, being part of this show is a wonderful privilege and pleasure for me. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. And I'll talk with you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Demi Lawrence.
Demi, we're going to listen very soon to your podcast. And I've already heard it. And it was amazing. Super impressive.
Thank you.
What would you like to tell us about the person you chose and why you chose them?
So Catherine Dixon is the co-founder of Nature Positive, which helps businesses, well, it's a consultancy business that helps businesses in the nature space as opposed to the climate space. So it's a growing industry in terms of connecting businesses to their impact on biodiversity and water and soil, along with many other things, but it's a different lens on sustainability. But I was drawn to this because I would like to go into consultancy or be an advisor in a consultancy business. And so it was a good way to get some insight of how that looks and what it's all about and some positive and negatives of the whole industry.
Welcome to another episode of the Master of Sustainable Business Cohorts Coming Up for Air series, an opportunity for students like myself to talk and network with sustainable business experts in a field we're interested in, about their day-to-day and impacts they have towards the greater good of both people and planet. Kia ora, I'm Demi Lawrence and I'll be spotlighting today's podcast episode. I'm currently completing my final two papers alongside my thesis within the Master of Sustainable Business course. Having the privilege of two part-time jobs beside my study, the first being a Te Kura student lead for Otago University's Sustainability Office, focused on supporting and enriching the university's sustainability neighbourhoods experience, and secondly as a tutor for a second-year paper on ethically responsible leadership. Today I will be bringing you an episode of Coming Up for Air, delving into the angle of sustainable business consultants from Altipoti's Nature Positive. I had the absolute pleasure of interviewing the co-founder of Nature Positive, Catherine Dixon, where we discussed the evolution of sustainability in business, some challenges which sustainability experts face, success stories in the field, and trends and drivers of sustainability within business. But first, let's hear from Catherine about who she is and the aims of her business.
So I'm co-director at Nature Positive. Nature Positive is a consultancy firm that we set up in 2021, mm-hmm. just after COVID, the Great Reset. So I founded it with my husband, partner in life and partner in business, Robin Mitchell. And what we aim to do is support organisations and companies. My short summary is to say we support them to be their best environmental selves.
Awesome.
That's probably a little bit too broad. We're a little bit more neat than that. So their best environmental self would lend itself to thinking of like broad ESG objectives, mm-hmm. Broad environmental objectives, whereas we're very much focused on the nature space. So just going backward a little bit, I would say, so Robin and I used to live in the UK. We moved to New Zealand in the year 2000, but for family reasons, we went back to the UK for 3 years, around about 2014 to 2017, something like that. And when we were there, we could see how international legislation and recommendations for companies and the drivers for companies were moving beyond climate and into the nature space. And we could see that many of the international corporations and companies were starting to look at their impact and dependencies on nature. as well as Clive. When we came back to New Zealand, that wave hadn't really started here yet. So whereas companies were reporting on their impacts of climate, they weren't taking that next leap to look at nature as well and incorporate that. And
sorry to interrupt, but yeah, that would be like instead of looking at your emissions, you're looking more at like the biodiversity that you're affecting within your business.
That's right. So you're looking at it as well. So as well as looking at your emissions, mm-hmm. you're also thinking, what are our impacts on fresh water? What are our impacts on biodiversity? What are our impacts on soil health? And importantly, what are our dependencies on nature? You know, what's happening in our supply chain? Are we dependent on a product from the natural world that then, you know, there may be a shortage of in the future?
Mm-hmm.
And the drivers for looking at those things are coming from multiple angles. So we could see that there was a gap here, a gap in expertise and knowledge, perhaps. And so we started the consultancy to give advice on that, on how to do that. Yeah, so that's what we
Very
do.
Cool.
Catherine further goes on to define her view of what sustainability is, heavily weighing on the value of respect for both self, others, and nature, saying that if you start from a place of respect, all decisions that follow will be inherently sustainable. Further going on to say how we're an integral part of nature, having reciprocity of being a part of nature and nature being a part of us, creating an interdependence between us and nature. While we are kaitiakitanga or guardians, we are also reliant on nature. In terms of their business, a key aspect of Nature Positive is conveying this in a language that is understandable for business, that they too are reliant on nature. But also, as Catherine will state, having a realistic time frame for the change they wish to see.
The conversations we're having, a lot of it is about simplifying that complexity into distilling it into something that can be understood by somebody who hasn't been immersed in conversations about ecology and nature for their entire career.
Yeah.
And actually that the gulf is much larger than we appreciated at the beginning because, I guess because you don't know what you don't know. So
you're educating as well as...
We're finding that science communication is a huge part of our role. And being realistic about expectations and the time it takes to craft a nature strategy for a company or to, it's one thing to set an ambition, another thing to meet it. So, setting nature ambitions, making things realistic and credible. So there's been a lot of learning. Yeah.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've encountered when trying to implement sustainable practices towards other businesses?
Biggest challenges? I would say... resourcing. I think sustainability teams in organisations and companies nationally, here within Aotearoa New Zealand, but also internationally, are at full stretch. And many of the people that we work with are in small teams. They're super passionate about what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're super skilled. And they're just it's not enough hours in the day, ahead of people in the team, to do everything that they want to do. And so a lot of our work is supporting them to work as smart as possible, you know, to try and tick multiple goals with one. And so that's a really big challenge because the risk of burnout in sustainability teams is very real. And also we're finding so people have had a long journey and a steep learning curve, learning about reporting on climate targets and declaring their emissions. And then suddenly this what feels like a whole new wave of learning and tasks coming through with the nature agenda. So that's quite daunting. And so being able to work with people to walk alongside them whilst they do that learning. So that's a huge challenge. The risk of burnout within sustainability professionals.
Yeah, and the size and scale of which those individuals can adopt certain tasks and
that's right and then of course in our country in Aotearoa New Zealand we have a small team of sustainability professionals, so looking after each other and this isn't a challenge for me but I think it is a challenge for the sector that there's a limited number of roles and positions, and so you know, it's hard. They're hard to fill. It's hard to recruit.
The risk of burnout for sustainability professionals, which Catherine discussed, is a very real problem in this field. A news article by EcoBusiness titled "Chief Sustainability Officers Are Burning Out: Has the Role Become Unsustainable?" further affirms the growing number of pressures pushing sustainability professionals to the limit as their roles expand and evolve. One of the key issues of having the role is being unsupported and isolated as jobs come few and far between. Furthermore, the fact sustainability experts are so passionate about the cause leaves many susceptible to giving more than they get back. Linking back to Catherine's definition of sustainability, the corporate nature of their role often lacks the key value of sustainability and its reciprocity. However, through connection and supporting one another and focusing on individual well-being, as we'll discuss through the next question, this is key to being better for both the job and others. Now let's flip it on its head and listen to some success stories that Catherine has to share.
It's quite a neat success story of, it wasn't a business, well, I suppose it's agribusiness in general. One of my first projects at Nature Positive was working with Beef and Lamb New Zealand, and we were looking at, I was working as part of a larger research program called the Hill Country Futures Program, and we were looking at options for resilient farming or how to, it was a, the very broad research question was how to increase resilience for sheep and beef farms across New Zealand, and there was lots of people working on that project. And my segment of that project ended up with us looking at, we sort of pivoted from looking at traditional ecological metrics to looking at well-being metrics, because we realised that the kaitiaki, the farmers themselves, the key part of that challenge in keeping the farmers resilient, obviously ensures that the farm business will be resilient, and then the farm itself will be resilient. So we sort of completely pivoted the project to come up with a framework and a model, and again a science communication tool looking at farmer health and well-being, and the idea that is the farmer, you know, the people working on the farm are strong and well cared for, that they have more ability to care for their land in the future. And that work has led into some well-being metrics being designed for measuring the health and resilience of farmers and how that links to the health and resilience of the farm business and farm environmental system.
Wow.
That sort of package of metrics is called Farm Salute. It's sort of been packaged up as a deal. And that now is receiving some extra funding to be rolled out as a tool for rural professionals to use, to increase the capacity for rural professionals to talk about health and well-being with farmers, and also have a tool to, if they want to, like work with a catchment group, say, to sort of say, well, let's measure how healthy, how's the well-being of your farming community in this catchment, and then as a baseline, and then we can measure that after we've been working with you for 2 years and things. So that's been just a really neat success story in that it's raised awareness, I think, of the importance of kaitiaki, and it's just given a different lens to look at sustainability and resilience in agriculture.
100%.
So that was a really interesting journey to be a part of, and I was very fortunate to be working with great co-workers in the industry. And I learned a lot, from those at working at Beef and Lamb.
Very cool. It's kind of like that you're no good for anybody if you're not good for yourself.
That's
like
right.
To really protect your own self and your well-being.
Yeah, and your farmer.
In order to do,
In order to make good decisions and, that's right, and be able to invest. And then also other things. So the questions that are in that Farm Salutes pack, they talk about where is... traditional metrics might ask about the profit and loss of your business. The Farm Salutes approach is to ask the farmer more, much more about how do you feel about, you know, your business. Are you sleeping well at night? Because you might be making a lot of profit, but actually if you're not going to see your family, you're not going to leave the farm.
Yeah, and that's the core of sustainability. If it's not good for the future
Yeah.
and that longevity,
then it's not. it's not sustainable for yourself. And actually, it comes back down to that respect question. You know, when I said we were talking about sustainability, you know, it's about respect for yourself.
Yeah.
Having respect for yourself and your whānau, and then you can extend that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so really interesting.
That's a really cool angle, and it sounds quite different to the kind of work that you would have been doing.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I call it a rabbit hole, but that sort of undersells it. But it was one of those. It was through human-centered design approaches. Mm-hmm. So really following the needs of the end users. So it was the farmers requesting, or we started with a sort of fairly traditional survey around farm resilience, and they sort of said, "Well, yeah, but we fill these things in quite a lot for, you know, different needs for farm plan and things, and it's not really hitting the spot." And so we changed it, and ended up realizing that actually it was the social side of the equation that was missing. And then went down there, and then suddenly people said, "Yeah, this is new. This is different. This is actually really valid."
Yeah.
So that was so
really impactful. Really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
While important to hear a success story in the field of nature-based solutions through the lens of well-being in the case Catherine just gave, it's key to know the drivers and trends which direct the need for businesses to change towards becoming more sustainable. Catherine now touches on the levers of which are pushing businesses to become more environmentally sustainable.
What we try to do is to encourage the organisations or the businesses that we work with to lead in in the environmental arena. So we're always sort of saying, well, what's the business case for investing in nature? What's the business case for you being more sustainable? What's the, you know, what are your drivers? And they might say, well, it's our shareholders, it's our customers. I think there's more demands. I think customers are demanding more and asking more questions. And I think, everybody's having to pull their socks up a bit, actually. I think the more people who ask, you know, sorry, why is my takeaway container plastic? Or, you know, everything from waste through to energy use through to, you know, carbon emissions. I think it's all changing slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. You know, the dials are moving in the right direction. And local businesses are playing their part through to international corporations. Internally, I think it's a huge motivator for employees and a huge sense of pride. So it can help with staff retainment, staff performance, staff engagement. So I think there's internal drivers that are really important, whatever the size and scale of the business. And externally, it can be directly linked to the product. You know, you can have a product that is completely marketed around sustainability, so obviously then it's integral to the business. But even if it's not, I think shareholders now are expecting a level of responsibility towards sustainability. So I think it's there's a safeguarding element there as well, even to businesses that may not think of themselves as sustainable. And then there's some very practical issues like cost saving, you know, more sustainable practices. If you take the example of Regen Ag in the agricultural sector, regenerative agriculture, there's lots of studies coming out of and lots of Regen Ag farmers who would say that their costs have decreased, their farming model has become more profitable, or the profits have stayed the same, but they are putting less time in, or you know, less. Less capital spend and things. So I think there's huge benefits to be had by being more sustainable. And of course, goes without saying, it's more sustainable. So it's more, you know, it's not a boom and bust cycle. So as a business model, you know, the whole thing is sort of more steady in approach.
More reliable. Awesome.
An article by Ferreira et al. Enhances Catherine's argument and perspective of stakeholders like shareholders and or customers wanting the change of supporting more sustainably aligned and dedicated businesses, stating how civic consciousness of the environmental state of the planet has increased and therefore their care and commitment towards it, thus pushing businesses to act and align with awareness and commitment of environmental sustainability.
Cool, so we've got our closing question that all of us students are asking our guest experts, which is, what makes you think positively about the future?
Oh, my children. How can you not think? You know, young people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot... I think we're out of the dip. I really do. That's what Nation Positive is all about. I think I see a lot more practical action, on the ground action, you know, whether it's planting trees and riparian plantings.
Mm-hmm.
I see, you know, I work with schools and I see children out planting. I see a lot more awareness about nature and the natural world and sustainability in general. So although things might not be moving as fast as we would all like, they are moving in the right direction. And I think we have to stay optimistic and positive. Yeah, I live near the beach as well, and I walk on the beach pretty much every day. And I think that's sort of my source of nourishment from the natural world every day. And that always makes me feel positive. I think if we can keep touching nature, we'll keep remembering how good it is for our soul, and that, you know, that's gonna help.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much, Catherine, for all the time and expertise. It's been great to have you.
Thank you.
Absolutely wonderful. Well done. That was a really nice job that you've done there. What was your big takeaway from the interview?
There was a lot of takeaways that I found really interesting throughout that, but I feel the one that resonated with me the most deeply was the fact that sustainability experts have challenges within finding connection and support, but ways around that is finding like-minded people and growing as a community, and it is a growing community, and I think there's a lot of positives that can be spun onto that challenge. But yeah, for me it was looking after yourself and realizing that your well-being has a huge impact on your, well, obviously yourself, but those around you as well, and to keep that in check.
What do you think you'll take into your own practice space going forward from the interview?
I think exactly that to look after myself to the best abilities, both physically, mentally, spiritually, to be able to be the best I can be in the industry and to provide my best work, is to look after myself and to be my best self.
That is so important. And gosh, it is sometimes really hard to do that, isn't it? Because we're not raised to do it. We're not programmed to do it. So it's actually really, it's against all of the things that the world tells us, that we must put everyone else first, or we must think about other people, and we mustn't be selfish and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, that is, it's so important, and best to learn it at your end of life and not mine. It's really hard to learn as you get older. So you're exactly right. When you think about the future, if you were, I ask almost everybody, if I was the magic job fairy and I was going to wave my magic wand and create the perfect job for you, what would that be?
Wow. Wouldn't that be nice if you could wave your wand? I feel like one where I could be in the biggest industries that are having the most pollutants and harm on the environment. If I could be in one of those chairs to speak on behalf of the environment and to really put it first and have that position of power to make those changes and pull those levers, that would be a dream.
Wow. I wish that I was the magic job fairy just so that I could get you to do exactly that. Is it that those jobs don't exist, or they just don't exist enough?
I don't think they're given enough power within these industries, and they may, it's almost siloed from what I understand in the reading that I did throughout that podcast, when Catherine mentions how sustainability experts are struggling and it's unsustainable, their roles, that, yeah, they're not given the justice that they need or should be provided to enable those big changes that need to happen. within the industries.
How do we fix that? Is it through education programs like this Bachelor of the Master of Sustainable Business, where we get to actually bring people in to think about that, or do we need to start earlier to make people want to come into these kind of programs?
That's a good question. I feel like there's many different ways we can pull at society to help enable that to happen, but it's those organizations that are so built in their ways to infiltrate them and to show them, likely by consumers or stakeholders, as Catherine mentioned also in the podcast, to give that influence and that power to the need for environmental and social sustainability. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Is that what you're going to be kind of focusing on with your thesis?
A little, I suppose. I am looking at the medical, at the right to repair medical devices.
Oh.
So the right to repair is a global movement, which started mostly with technologies like smartphones and machinery like tractors. But now, since COVID-19 has been looked at more seriously in the medical or healthcare sector, because of the lack of likes of ventilators and devices that were crucial in that time period, that were just not able to be fixed within house or by third parties. So I suppose it is a big organisation. It's not the likes of Coca-Cola or Fonterra, but it is still an industry that should have a lot of impact and can have a lot of impact. In a way, I suppose I am.
That is so fascinating. So you're, on the one hand, you've got a whole movement devoted to the right to repair. On the other hand, you've got a whole manufacturing ethos that's planned around planned obsolescence, so everything's designed to fail. Wow. So how do you manage that?
It's a lot of legislative work. So the power of policy really comes into play. But it's also the push of consumers to want that, to get it through government and to get it into action and to overrule those manufacturers and their ways of making money, basically.
I'm absolutely cannot wait to read this bit of work. So how will you approach that? Who will you talk to and what will you talk about?
So I'm still somewhat figuring it out, but I do know that I'd like to talk to biomedical engineers as they're kind of the crucial cog in the wheel within hospitals for repairing devices. But also those that use the devices, anaesthetists are apparently really passionate about sustainability and therefore would be interested in the right to repair. It's mostly the staff of hospitals that I'll be interviewing.
I remember early last year, there was a student in the online version of the program you've just done, and she was an anaesthetist nurse in a veterinary practice, and she looked at the amount of waste of like gas and medicine, because there's just so much just through the way that systems are managed, everything goes to waste. If it's not used, it goes to waste. That's it.
Mm.
And so she changed some processes within the way that they managed the anaesthetizing of animals before surgery, and save them a fortune in their actual research project.
It's often the way that it does have economic benefits to be more sustainable.
Yeah.
Which gives more cause. Yeah.
Certainly was in this case.
Mm.
We talked to one of your colleagues, and for the life of me, I can't remember who it was because it was weeks ago, who was looking at reuse in the meat industry. And it was an interesting balance between the need for hygiene and the sustainability. So it was things like the challenges that she was identifying were things like you could reuse the white gumboots, but then they're not white anymore, and so they weren't allowed to be used. And I suspect it's going to be a matter of, you're going to find a lot of things like that.
Yeah, definitely safety within hospitals is massive. That is the whole point of them, is to be a safe environment. So that will definitely be a factor. It is. I am looking mostly at the barriers that are preventing this movement. So, yeah, that safety is one.
There's quite a lot of literature, not quite a lot. There are some papers in the human-computer interaction space looking at reuse and things like reuse, open data, in communities such as steampunk. And that might sound like it's totally left field, but it actually has some really interesting things about the need for communities and sort of the unwritten rules of the communities, and you have to develop those in order to make it happen. So it's not just a matter of changing the rules, because then things still won't happen, but how do you actually change the culture in those spaces?
Yeah, 100%. It becomes ingrained, the way of doing things, for a lot of places.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
I actually prepared this one earlier. But sustainability to me is reciprocity. It's the conscious mindfulness practice of meeting the needs of the present without compromising the ability and the abundance of future generations to meet their own needs. More so, it's a harmonious balance between the environmental stewardship and social well-being, with the acceptance of the need for a stable economy. So resources are respected, ecosystems are preserved, and communities thrive in equity and resilience. It's a commitment to living within the planet's limits while fostering innovation and practices that support both human and ecological growth, creating a legacy of health, diversity, and vitality for all life forms.
That sounds good to me. I like how you said a harmonious balance, because quite often people just say balance and then it's waving Moira's magic wand as to how that balance is achieved and what are the challenges of doing that. It also, my trouble with a balance is that it sets the things up in opposition.
Mm.
And
yeah, I can see that.
And that suggests that we can do the economics and society, or we can do the environment. But the whole point of sustainability is that they're the same thing.
Yes, exactly.
But you were cleverly put harmonious in front of it.
And you talked about limits, and I really like that. Because if we're living within the limits, well, then we're minimising our impact, and that's a good thing. Yeah, it's just a shame that we've now so far outside of the limits that we have to actually go so far inside the limits now to try and restore.
Mm.
So that brings in the ideas of regeneration, but also what you were talking about before, about what Catherine Dixon's consultancy is about. It's not just about carbon. And so much of what we're branding now as sustainable just means carbon.
Exactly. It's like this new wave that's coming, that actually the nature side of it is equally, if not more, important. And it is, having all of everything that's needed, not just secluding one part and saying that's enough, but to, account for the soil, for the water, for the biodiversity. It's all necessary.
When I was first working on the regional council's land plan in the early 90s, we had a farmer representative argue that when we were talking about measuring carbon, soil carbon, in a different sense, it was actually looking at the health of the soil, suggested that he could find a supply of pencil sharpenings and distribute that over the ground to increase the soil carbon. It probably wouldn't have actually had much effect. But the trouble with reducing things down to an individual thing like that is that it opens up gaming it and not actually changing the systems that we need to change.
Mm.
You talked about hope. You talked about Florence and the Machine's Dog Days Are Over being a song of hope. What keeps you positive?
Wow. For me, it's being within nature and seeing the strength of nature itself. If all humans were to leave today, it would be more than capable of coming back better and stronger and healthier. So I have faith because of the way nature is and the strength it holds and the power that it demonstrates through everything it does.
I have some questions to end the show and almost negative time to ask them, so we're going to have to really wriggle, and I'll probably have to cut some out. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
I think getting the award for the Green Gown Award for Australasia for a student sustainability champion. That was a pretty big moment for me to have that accolade presented, and yeah, I'm really grateful for that.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So what's your superpower?
Should have prepared for this one. I think to push through and to see the positive in everything, to be optimistic.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I do, actually. Even though it's quite a controversial word, I would say I'm an activist.
I suspect your teachers at what school did you say it was? Lime Hill would be proud of you.
Thank you.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Coffee, in all honesty. Knowing the coffee machine's there and that I can quickly get a coffee.
And lastly, what advice do you have for our listeners?
Look after yourself. And even though it feels selfish putting yourself first, it is more powerful towards helping others and all those that need you by helping yourself.
Good advice. Thank you for that.
Demi, it has been absolutely wonderful having you in our class this semester. Not just for the way that you share ideas, but the way that you encourage others to share theirs. It is a special kind of skill that not everybody has. Not everybody has what it takes to encourage other people to say things, even when it's not what you think. But you just seem to be able to just sit with people being real about themselves, and I appreciate that. And so thank you for bringing yourself to our class and for all the richness that you've brought to that space. And we wish you all the best for the future ahead. May you find joy and may you find that job that enables you to achieve your ambitions in life, because you'll be amazing.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Through falling leaves, I pick my way slowly. Talking aloud eases my mind. Sunlight filters through, I feel my head is bursting. So full of thoughts, I fall. What am I going to do? I need some thoughts that I.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is The Formulas and Nature. Moira Karatai introduced Demi Lawrence, who brought us the last of this series of Coming Up for Air. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.